My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to WFAN's Baseball Insiders Spring Training Podcast for Sunday, March 14th. I'm Sweeney Murdy. Earlier on Sunday, Ed Coleman and I had a few hours on WFAN, and you can check out some of our conversations with Yankees analyst David Cohn from the YES Network, also Mets third base coach Gary DeSarcina. They're separately on the WFAN audio on demand pages or on the WFAN.com homepage. You can find them there as well. In the meantime, here is some of me and Eddie C as we discussed some of the Yankees and Mets spring training storylines earlier today.
The Mets committed some errors last night, again, unfortunately. Jonathan Villar had a couple at third. Third base has been a particularly troublesome spot for the Mets, and their errors for that matter.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say, you know, third base, it used to be the joke with the Mets, right? In the first, what, maybe 20 years of the franchise, all the third basemen they went through.
Yeah,
exactly. And now there seems to be a little bit of an issue there this spring.
There does. Well, it just the defense in general, you know, with this club. And we were talking with Louis Rojas about it after the game last night. They've spent an awful lot of time controlling the running game and also on defense, but that hopefully will get better. One thing that they did last night was not hit with runners in scoring position, which killed them last year. That was that was their story last year. They left a small army on base, and in particular, you know, not getting the runners over. That has been particularly troublesome, or was last year, and it has been at times, you know, thus far this spring. I think there's a lot of good things that have come out of Met Camp, and I think, you know, the team is coming together, but at the same time, you're about halfway through. I guess I think today is probably the halfway point, right?
You've got like 2.5 weeks to opening day, so yeah about that with exhibition play, sure. Yeah,
they played, yeah, this might be the 12th game they played, whatever, out of 24. Anyhow, they, you know, you'd like to start to come together or gel a little bit better, and especially in the field too, because you know, they've never been a great defensive team, and anyway, maybe DeSar can answer some of those questions for us, as you know, he's done a lot of work with JD Davis, VR, and others. You know, it's interesting, Swain, that you want versatility. And you want to be able to move people around to different spots that can give you flexibility for your lineup, et cetera. But at the same time, you know,
they need to be
nice,
good in those spots.
It's also nice to get comfortable in a spot too. And I think that's, you know, that's part of the process that they're going through right now.
Yeah. VR is kind of interesting to me. What does he have a specific spot? Is he going to be the guy bouncing around, or can he wrestle one of these spots away?
He's another. You know, I think he's most comfortable at second and short, but they're trying him at third, and he had some problems last night. Again, it's probably you know, location for him, where he is. Is he too far back? Is he too far in playing short hops, etc.? Something he's not used to. The ball's on you a little bit, you know, obviously more quicker at third than it is at short and second. So I think he's more comfortable in the other two spots, but they'd like him to move around. They've even popped him in the outfield for a little bit to try to get some work out there. They want him, you know, to be as versatile as possible. So how many he can pick up and how many he can play well, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, and he's been around, so, you know, that shouldn't bother. But the idea of, you know, trying to get young players into the groove here, you know, they lost all his game action last year, so trying to get them the reps, just game reps. It's one thing to hit a guy a million ground balls. It's another thing to, you know, to do it in game reps. So trying to find some of the young guys to be able to do it is going to be kind of hard too. You know, listen, if you got Francisco Lindor anchoring things, you know, it seems like you at least have an advantage that most teams don't. So, I mean, it's not going to hide any problems you have at second or third, but if you've got Lindor able to do his thing and stay healthy, you know, that's a definite advantage.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any question. He's been like an additional coach on the team, too. He's helped out the guys at third. He's helped out Jeff McNeil at second as well. So, you know, he's going to run that infield. I don't think there's any question about that. You know what's interesting? I was mentioning this yesterday that I don't know if you saw the SI piece on Lindor when he was talking about the other shortstops.
Not yet.
Yeah, the great shortstop class is coming up next year. You know, Trevor Story and Correa and Sager and all those guys will be free agents. And he was talking about him being the best overall. Like, he didn't have specifically, you know, he wasn't the best hitter. He might not have been the best glove man. But everything together, he felt he was the best shortstop. Yeah, well, listen, that's confidence, and that's that's part of what makes you. But there was one interesting thing that, and I've always liked this guy, and he was mentioned in there as best glove, Freddie Galvis.
Oh yeah,
I've always liked him, and I've always liked him for his glove. I've always liked him as a player, but you never hear him mentioned with, you know, the other big name shortstops or whatever. And it was all of a sudden, you know, you're going across and you're reading a lot of big names, and Freddie Galvis, what? How did Freddie get in here? But I thought it was interesting Lindor dropped him in there, because I've always liked his game.
I thought Freddie Galvis was just the perfect guy 2 years ago when, you know, Didi Gregorius was having Tommy John surgery, and the Yankees needed somebody for the first half of the season. I thought, you know, rather than moving Torres over, which is what they ended up doing, and, you know, they had LeMahieu all of a sudden emerge as this, you know, guy, so it kind of worked. But I thought Galvis was the perfect guy to slide, because then he could slide into that role to move around, and he offered a little bit of versatility in the lineup, things like that. I really thought, you know, and every time you talk to somebody about him, people that have coached in the league and watched in the league, and they say this is one of the best guys to have on the team. You know, Galvis, and the fact that he has trouble finding jobs, I guess for a certain salary point or whatever, but the fact that he has trouble finding jobs, I think is amazing, because you want sure-handed defenders. Mm-hmm. That's what this guy is, and he can handle the bat. And we kind of hope that those guys find their way onto a team more regularly. But you know, the bats are what plays, and you kind of work with the glove. And Galvis is kind of the other way around. It's maybe not as easy to find work these days for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I noted that one of the storylines in Mets camp has been Marcus Stroman with his split change.
Yeah.
I noticed there's a Yankee pitcher who's using that as well.
Yeah, Aroldis Chapman's starting to break it out, and it's kind of interesting. And I did, for, you know, those who listen and don't listen, you know, we have, you and I both have our daily podcasts up on WFAN.com. And up on the WFAN Baseball Insider site and your podcast site. Yesterday, as I talked about, you know, the split change that Chapman is throwing, and had a lot of people. Darren O'Day put it best. He said he watches Chapman play catch when the pitchers are out in the outfield, he watches him play with Sessa, and he said that it moved. He feels bad for Luis Sessa trying to play catch with Aroldis Chapman because when he's throwing that split change, he said it turns from a game of catch to a game of fetch. I guess it gets away, but that's kind of a good thing for, you know, when you're facing the hitters, it might provide, you know, some problems for the catchers, and that might be an issue, but it seems to be enough of a pit, and you can talk to us about how Stroman feels about this, but this seems to be a pitch that Chapman has enough confidence in that he's really starting to work in. It's not just a show pitch in spring training. This seems to be a pitch that he broke out a little bit last year and is going to be a really important piece of his repertoire going forward because, you know, he's not throwing 105 anymore. He's throwing only 99, 100, but he's trying to figure out how to keep the guys honest, and that pitch is going to be a real weapon for him, especially against right-handers.
It's always a great pitch for any pitcher, you know, starter, reliever, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's sometimes a hard one to master, and that's why you always see kids coming up, you know, fastball, curve, slider, and a developing changeup or something like that. And you know, you got a circle change, you got a split change, you got you got several variations, but it can be a very effective pitch for him. And listen, you know, to have a pitch like that for a guy like Chapman, to me, would be could be devastating. You know, if he can command that and use it often enough. And you're right, not just as a show pitch. You know, Stroman had talked about he's a sinker slider guy, and he was actually working on his slider the other day to kind of play off that because they came up analytically and said that the hard hit balls, you know, that controls a hard hit percentage the best of any of his pitches, the slider.
Okay.
So, you know, he – and I don't know if he didn't realize that before, but, you know, they pointed that out to him analytically, and so he's worked off that pitch a little bit more than usual, but they've also he's incorporated a four-seamer, which, you know, he threw, but he didn't throw that often, just to change eye level.
Sure.
You know, because everybody's, you're down with him all the time. Sinker slider, he's a ground ball pitcher, you're looking down all the time. All of a sudden, you know, you buzz up, change the eye level a little bit, give somebody give them something else to think about. So, you know, that helps.
The thing with Chapman, Eddie, is, you know, you've seen he's given up two very big home runs in the last two postseasons for the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
The one to Altuve in Houston and the one to Brasso against the Rays last year.
Right.
And both right-handed batters. And you're timing the fastball, you roll a slider, you know, it's getting a little bit, you know, he's a little more predictable, I guess, and he threw a bad slider to Altuve. I actually forget what the pitch was to Brasso. I got to look at that one again. But that was a long at bat where he's seeing a lot of pitches, so he's timing the fastball and he can see the slider. And now this changeup gives him a little bit of a different look. And you know, they were saying yesterday that he's even thrown it to left-handers, which, you know, isn't ideal, the left-on-left changeup, but it gives you a little idea of the confidence he has in the pitch and how it moves, and
right.
But especially when he's facing right-handers, he can still wipe out the left-handers with the slider. But when he's facing right-handers, that changeup is going to be something. And you know, he's got to prove. This is where the fate of the Yankees really does rest in a lot of health, but it also rests in Aroldis Chapman, because you're talking about the last 2 years when the Yankees had teams they thought were good enough to win. And, you know, he gave up big home runs that that lost playoff series for them. You have to get over that. And you're going to give the ball to him. This isn't some other if you look at World Series champs from the last several years, they've had bullpen issues, and they've always had them, but they've kind of figured out how to manage their staffs and get, you know, starting pitchers into the relief roles in the World Series. And, you know, what the Red Sox did it, you know, they used Evaldi out of the pen, and, you know, Urias for the Dodgers last year. You saw what the Nats did after all those, you know, all their bullpen disasters. Aroldis Chapman's going to get the ball for the Yankees in October. He's just going to. And so, rather than trying to find pieces around, you got to fix him. And as good as he is during the course of a regular season, he's had some issues. And now you're going to find out if this is a weapon that can kind of, you know, I guess just get him to be a little bit more effective against the right-handers and keep them from timing him, teeing him up.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, Diaz with the Mets, and he's pitched well. He's pitched very well this spring. And a lot of Met fans are, you know, they're not going to listen simply because, you know, they remember the 2019 Edwin Diaz and not the 2020 Edwin Diaz or the 2017 or 18 Edwin Diaz who was terrific in Seattle. But he's working a little bit on a changeup, too. He's still going to be a fastball slider guy. But when he's on, you know, his stuff is electric, and it has been thus far. But it's the same thing. You know, when push comes to shove, he's going to close games, all right?
Yes.
You know, they have a lot of guys that can do that out there. But unless Edwin Diaz has pitched, say, 3 days in a row and maybe can't go, it's not going to be somebody else. They're going to hand the ball to Diaz to close a game. That's his job. Now, they never designate that. Luis Rojas is one of the last people to designate anybody for anything, any inning, any, you know, any position. He did mention that DeGrom is going to start opening day. That's good.
Wow,
that's good.
He let that cat out of the bag.
Yeah,
that's
he
awesome.
Did. He let it out early, as a matter of fact. But outside of that, there's nothing else coming that way. But, you know, I mean, Diaz is going to be the guy. And you like to see, I like to see anyway, you know, I know that's his bread and butter, fastball, spotting it, command it, slider, nasty,
yeah.
When it's on. But, you know, you have a changeup that you can throw in there, too. That's something else that somebody's got to think about. And I just think it makes your life a little bit easier. That's all.
You have to commit to it. I mean, and listen, yeah. how many times have you and I talked to pitchers in spring training? You know, I can, you know, it becomes a joke after a while where pitchers say, "I'm working on my changeup this spring." You know, and every March, people are like, "Oh yeah, it's a good pitch. It can be a good pitch for me." And then they get into a spot in the, you know, with two men on in the fourth inning, and you know they're putting in their back pocket, and they're not going to their, you know, "I'm not going to get beat with my third or fourth best pitch" kind of thing.
Right.
But the secret is having the confidence in it to not make it your third, make it maybe your third pitch, but have it be just as good as the first two. And that's where you're trying to get to. Thank you to Brian Hoke, who's listening. I guess he's listening on the app because, you know, he's down in Florida. He told me that the Brasso homer was on a fastball. So thank you.
Okay.
He's actually, you know, he reminds me, it's time for a good plug. He has a book coming out later this summer about last season called The Bronx Zoom. It is
nice, very
fantastic.
Very good, Brian. Nice, very good. Stick that extra letter in.
Yeah.
Stick that extra letter in. You got it made. That's great.
Yeah. So he reminds you, and that's a, you know, make sure you pick that one up later this summer. But the Brasso homer on a fastball. So, but you're right. The idea, you know, things have to drastically implode for the Yankees or the Mets to really think about altering their game closing plan, you know, shifting a reliever or drastically altering things. They've got guys who are proven closers, and that's what some of these other teams have lacked. Now you go back, go back to when the Yankees winning championships, Mariano Rivera is closing them all out. Now I gave you a bunch of examples recently where teams have overcome that. You know, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, the Astros, the Nationals, they've all kind of managed to reshuffle their pitching staff and come up with a bullpen that can finish out games. It's just not handing the ball to the closer, but you know, those teams had long-standing issues. They didn't have guys who, you know, in the Mets and Yankees cases, you expect to go out there and save 35 or 40 games, and then they're going to get the ball in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're dealing with now. So much rests on health of the players, obviously the everyday players, the production, everybody having great years, Lindor and Alonso and Judge and LeMahieu and everybody else. But at the end of the day, you're going to have a lead. You're giving the ball to Aroldis Chapman, and you're giving the ball to Edwin Diaz. You're going to say, let's get us to the next round, or let's get us to the parade. And, you know, it's all up to them.
Yeah. Another important point in there, too, is not dropping your pitches and, you know, not forgetting your pitches if they're not necessarily working that day. You know, DeGrom was talking the other day. I found it very interesting that he, you know, he said, I never like to drop a pitch, even if it's not working for me that day. I'll show it if you know, if it's not good and I don't really have it that day, you know, say the changeup, just for, you know, for an example, he said I won't lose it and I won't forget it or shelve it, but you know, I might show it occasionally, but I just want the hitter to know that or whatever. I think he was talking about two seamers, which he's having some problems with. That was the Conforto thing where he was okay. working on the two seamer with Conforto, who took him deep in live BP. He says, get back in there for a second one. Then Conforto took him deep again on the two seamer. And he said, yeah, I think I'll forget that pitch for a while. But, you know, the point was that he doesn't forget that. And that's what makes him a great pitcher as well, too. He said, he's gone through games where he hasn't had it early, but he's found it, you know. So eventually it may come back, and then you have your entire arsenal you can use, too. I was asking you during the break about, this is my dark horse in the Mets bullpen, Miguel Castro, who pitched last night, pitched well again, as a matter of fact. Guy is working on a changeup, trying another guy working on a changeup, fastball slider guy. But he's been prone to walks in the past.
Yeah.
And when he faced the Yankees, he didn't have a lot of success. Young kid when he came up. What was he, 20?
Yeah, he was 20 when he came up. He's only 26 now. Always threw hard, but had a hard time, you know, controlling it. And that's, you know, first thing off the top of my head was, yeah, control problems. Then I looked up, you know, a 5.5 ERA against the Yankees in his career. I'm like, oh, yeah, now I remember this guy. He was. You face the Yankees 18 times, you know, those hitters in the lineup are it's hard to fool them, right? So you get a guy like that who sees them a lot. But yeah, you get a little change of scenery and maybe get a little rejuvenated. He's still young. And if he, you know, it looks like last year he finally figured out a little more swing and miss. Because he always threw hard, but his strikeout to walk numbers, his strikeouts per nine numbers were never overwhelming.
Right.
And all of a sudden last year it jumped up in the short season. So maybe he's latched onto something here.
Yeah, he's commanding his pitches better. I think he can be a weapon for them. We'll see. But they like him. He's working, like we said, on the changeup. That'll help, I guess, a little bit. But, I'd call him a dark horse at this point. Carlos Carrasco is going to throw today. Going to play catch. I guess that's the best way to put it. So he'll be on flat ground. He's not going to face hitters till next weekend. And you know,
that's got to rule him out for at least the first week or two of the season, I would think, right?
I would think definitely the first week. Now, again, the Mets are never going to say that or admit that. Every time we ask, it's kind of, yeah, we think he'll be ready. But, I mean, when you put the numbers together, I mean, they're not going to throw him out there and have him go three or four innings in his first spring start. So, you know, it just makes sense that you're going to need somebody. I guess it's April 7th, I think, would be the first day they really need somebody, because DeGrom can come back and pitch a second time on April 6th. So, but, you know, that's not going to set him back that much. It's not going to set Carrasco back that much. I think he's fine. At least that's the – we'll find out more after today, I guess, when he plays catch. But
he's built up a little bit already?
And he's not worried about it. He said that he goes through this, has gone through this in the past. But, you know, it came right at the time, I think. Well, first it was Lugo, and then Zach Britton, and then a couple of days later, you know, Carrasco developed this. So all of a sudden you start thinking, okay, well, you're going to go under the knife and miss a couple of months. Doesn't seem to be the case, but it looks to me like it's, you know, probably going to be a delayed start for him at the beginning of the season.
What was it? Do you remember the time frame that they set on Lugo? Because he had the exact same thing that Britton had, you know, bone spur in the elbow.
I think they were hoping to have him back like the beginning of May. So, I think he wants to get back sooner and thinks he can, but we'll see. Yeah,
his surgery was a month ago?
I'm not sure it was a month ago. It was at least a couple of weeks ago. I don't have the exact date here, but yeah, it was at least a couple of weeks ago. So he's, it had to be close to a month, because he's...
It was right before the start of camp, right?
Right, exactly, because so he's ramping, you know, he's ramping up now at this point, just, you know, he's doing shoulder progressions and all that stuff, but... I would say the beginning of May, something like that.
So Britton's about a month behind. He's supposed to have his surgery tomorrow, and if you're talking about, you know, I would say, based on what you know, what I've been gathering about Britain, you know, mid to late June is probably the best case from what they're saying. You know, kind of bringing along slowly. Although it seems to be, you know, I guess we'll get a little bit of a roadmap to see what how quickly Lugo comes back from it. Although everybody's a little bit different. But you're still talking about missing the first 2 months of the season for sure,
right.
And then trying to figure out if you can get any piece of that third month, and obviously having for the second half. I very recently, Eddie, started to kind of dislike the idea of, and, you know, it's Severino's in the same boat, Syndergaard with the Mets. Oh, it's like getting a guy at the trade deadline. It's like getting a guy back. It's like making a... I've used that often, and I've repeated that because people have said it. But the more I think about it, you have this guy already, and you can't use him. So it's not like you're getting a... You know, I just don't love that analogy anymore. I'm just kind of getting tired of that. I think we have to figure out how to find out something. You have this toy that you can't use.
Right. Right.
You know, it's in your. You know, it's already there. So I'm not thrilled about that analogy anymore. I don't know why. I just figured I'd share that with you.
Well, maybe a lot of teams use it because if they fail to land the guy that they want at the
that's how they spin it, right?
At the trading deadline, they can say, well, we have this guy coming back.
Yeah,
and we got this
sure.
guy.
And a reminder that you can get my Yankees reports and Eddie's Mets reports delivered to you daily during spring training. Just subscribe to the WFAN Baseball Insiders podcasts on radio.com, Apple Podcasts, or your other podcast platforms. You can also find them on the WFAN.com homepage. Thank you all for listening. I'm Sweeney Murdy.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
it
taken care
forever,
of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.